From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour was made with a graduate. Tanner Burgess is 20 years old. He recently touted the benefits of his education to the Wall Street Journal, saying, quote, "It feels good at the end of the day. I'm physically doing something, and there's a sense of completion." Burgess graduated from a 9-month welding program last fall. He said it's a really smart route for kids who want to find something and aren't gung-ho on going to college. Well, nationally, there are gaps in the traditional trades workforce, mainly due to older generations of workers retiring. But is that changing? Well, post-pandemic, high tuition and concerns about student debt are driving more students to vocational careers. According to Bloomberg, the National Student Clearinghouse recorded a 16% increase in enrollment at two-year schools with a high vocational program focus, and a 2.6% rise in community college enrollment in 2023. In April, the Wall Street Journal called Gen Z the, quote, "tool belt generation." So what does the scene look like in the Rochester and Finger Lakes region, which has one of the largest and most intact collections of historic housing stock in the country? Well, a new program run through the Landmark Society of Western New York and Flower City Folk works to train students in window repair so they can join the tool belt generation if they choose. Prospective students for the Windows Workforce Pilot Training Program applied by June 30th. They were notified in July. They began their training in September. The students took part in paid hands-on window repair training with window restoration expert Steve Jordan. This hour, we're talking to the students and the organizers of the program about what they learned, their thoughts on their future careers, and the future of this industry. I'd like to welcome our guests now. Wayne Goodman is Executive Director of the Landmark Society of Western New York. Welcome back. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Evan. It's always a pleasure.
It's always nice to talk to Steve Jordan, instructor for the Windows Workforce Pilot Training Program. He's the owner of Pane in the Glass Window Restoration Company. He's the author of The Window Sash Bible, a guide to maintaining and restoring old wood windows. Nice to have you back here, Steve.
Thank you, Evan. I also want to give credit to Brandon Fleshauer, who assisted me in the program and the teaching.
Well, welcome as well to Hannah Davis, administrator in the Windows Workforce Pilot Training Program, founding director of Flower City Folk. Hey, welcome.
Hi.
I didn't know we'd be
me.
Talking about windows with you.
I know,
all the
plot
fun
twist.
I know, this is a plot twist. It's great to have Hannah with us. In studio with us, Merritt Smith is a student in the Windows Workforce Pilot Training Program. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's great.
And welcome on the phone, Christina Alario is with us, a student in the Windows Workforce Pilot Training Program, student at the Hammerstone School in Ithaca. Christina, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, Wayne, what is time anymore? I would have said it was like 1 or 2 years ago. It was probably more than that, that on the Five to Revive annual list for the Landmark Society was the traditional trades. How long ago was that?
Yeah, so I can remember being on this program talking about this specific listing on our Five to Revive list. And, you know, believe it or not, that was back in 2016.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, right. So 8 years ago, we appeared here and we talked about this need for those to be really getting back into the traditional trades and for there to be appropriate training for people interested in the trades. You know, Steve can talk more about this, but anyone who's ever tried to contact a contractor, any kind of a tradesman, tradespeople, it's really difficult to find those that are responsive just because of a short supply and retirement. So we were able to get some funding from the Rochester Area Community Foundation, the Historic Preservation Education Fund, as well as throwing a little bit of money into the program from our own operating budget. And we're able to, I think, really start a process that should be, I think, ongoing. And we're happy to facilitate this.
I want to talk to Steve and Hannah about how it really did come together here. And Steve, we've been talking to you. And this is the universal we. The hosts of this program, going back well before me, have been talking to you about this work for many years now. How did this particular program come together?
Well, I was originally contacted by Caitlin Mivas at the Landmark Society about this program. If they were able to get the grants to do it, would I participate? And it finally happened. But there was another thing that was interesting that happened. I was asked by a woman at the Rochester Academy of Medicine to come restore one window, and that window would be a prototype which they could show people and ask them to adopt a window. because it's a huge, beautiful home and the windows are in bad condition. Mm-hmm. And so I did that, and there were some people standing around me one day, and I thought, well, you know, we're trying to do this grant program of restoring windows and repairing windows, and to really do it effectively for a long-term process, we need a building to work in, and this would be a great building. So if we could work this out where we could bring our students in here and work on your windows, we'd be serving you, we'd be serving us, we'd be serving the community. And then I met with the person who manages the Academy of Medicine, and I said, now we'd need a workshop area. And they showed me this little warren of rooms in the basement that weren't appropriate. And I said, well, what about the carriage house, the garage? Mm. And he took me out there, and it was large, it was well lit, it had brand new wiring, and it was the perfect place for us to have a workshop for 6 weeks. And so that's sort of how it began.
Hannah, you want to add to that, how this all came together?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm the director of Flower City Folk. I've been fortunate to be on a few times talking about different stuff entirely, but the mission of Flower City Folk is to support traditional practices of all kinds. And I have a personal interest in traditional trades and historic preservation. So I was happy to kind of step in and carry this out with the Landmark Society. This was it was a massive undertaking. We have a bunch of people in the studio today, right? And we keep name dropping more people and other funders. My time was paid for by the State Arts Council. This is something that clearly takes it's a big lift. There are a lot of people, and it takes a lot of money, right? So this was it's a pilot program in the truest sense, right? But it was really exciting because of that. It's been a long time coming, but it was complicated.
Well, and we're going to talk to the students in a moment. Yeah. I want to ask Steve Jordan. You know, you talk to students, we'll get their perspective on what they're looking at. They're a little younger than you. How has your career been? How satisfying? How successful? Ups, downs? How would you describe it?
Well, I have to say, first of all, I come from a long lineage of men who don't want to work for somebody else. Okay. It has been gratifying. It made me a living. I put my children through college, you know, with the help of my wife. But I think it's been a great career. It could have been a lot more if I were willing to work with the personalities that come with having employees. I could have made real money, but I'm not willing to do that, and money's never been my primary goal. But there is a great opportunity out there.
Sounds like you have been pretty autonomous, that is important.
I have been. Oh, absolutely, yes.
All right, well, and you know, we're going to talk to the students about their experience here. By the way, Hannah, what was the timeline for all of this happening with the students?
Yeah, so, Caitlin at the Landmark Society applied for this funding years ago, I think pre-COVID, it took some time to pull things together. So the timeline is rather extended, but we got our stuff together and started recruiting students early summer. We started doing some marketing and outreach. We got in touch with all kinds of community organizations, educational organizations, etc. And we had 30-ish applicants in the end, and we were blown away by how qualified they were. These are not random people with random interests. These are people who are very suited to take this on and seemed promising. So we reviewed applications, and we selected 10 in the end, and that took about a month. So they were notified in August, I believe, and we got started mid-September. And then for the next 8 weeks, they met twice a week, mostly at the Academy of Medicine, but a few other area locations. It went. It was amazing to watch go down after all this time. It was really great.
Well, one of those students in the Windows Workforce Pilot Training Program is Merritt Smith, who's with us in studio. How did you find this program?
My wife. She was heavily involved in the Landmark Society for many years, and one day she forwarded me the listing, and I've been a stay-at-home dad since 2017, and now the kids are on the same school schedule, and I'm looking to get into doing some work, but still on a part-time basis where I can control my own schedule. And she found the program, and I have a background in set design and construction and furniture making and woodworking, and this just seemed like such a great opportunity to expand my skill set and move into a business that there's good demand for.
What do you expect you can do with this in the future?
I expect to run a window restoration business and have this be my source of income to fill my time and bring in more money for the family and go into, you know, people's homes and help them with their old windows to help them keep them in their house.
Well, Merritt's got a little news to break here.
I do. Following that up, I have established an LLC, Browncroft Historic Windows, and that is official, and it's I'm getting everything else lined up, insurance and a banking account for it, and I hope to start taking on work, you know, right around the corner.
What do you, would you say your level of skill acquisition has been, knowledge from the start of this program to where you are now?
Sure. I would say it, my knowledge has jumped forward significantly. I live in the Browncroft neighborhood and I have a bunch of double hung sash windows, most of which do not work, most of which have broken or just straight up cut sash cords from the previous owner. And it's been that way for quite a while because I was uncertain of how to proceed in repairing them. And I didn't want to cause more harm than good. And now having taken this program, I have a much better understanding of the anatomy of these windows, what's how to go about fixing them, the materials needed. And it's just really given me a lot more knowledge and confidence in how to proceed.
And with this new LLC, what's the ideal? I mean, how much work would you like to take on?
You know, I think I'd like to take on one or two customers at a time. So the way the process works is we go into someone's home, remove the sashes, bring them back to a workshop, fix them up. And then they actually need the glazing material needs some time to dry. So you can sort of work on one, get those ready, set them aside, work on another one. And by the time you're done with that one, go back to the first and you're ready. It's ready for painting and to be reinstalled. So you can kind of cycle through customers.
Not to be trite about it, but really there's been, in my experience, the last couple of years has been more of an awakening for me about this idea that we are in a very different era of employment. A lot of our parents and grandparents' generations, their parents, they would move into a career and that would probably be it for, you know, decades. And now there has to be some flexibility. Unless you can find something that is pretty, pretty tech-proof, pretty change-proof. And I wonder if you found it. I mean, how do you think of it?
I think so, yeah. That, you know, I think there's, obviously, like you said, there's a huge number of historic homes here in Rochester. And I think many of those homeowners really appreciate the character that their historic elements of those homes, including the windows, brings. And they want to do everything they can to preserve them and keep them. And it's a shame if there's not enough knowledgeable people to help them do that. And so that their only resource, if they have a broken window, they might feel like the only opportunity they have is to get a new one put in.
Yeah.
And so to help people see that there's an alternative is really great.
The guy across the table from you was saying that he really didn't want to work for a boss. He wanted to be his own boss. I get the sense that he rules with an iron fist. What have you learned? What has it been like? Have you gotten to know Steve?
Yeah, very well. And there's a absolute boatload of incredible stories. You could just have a 2-hour connections just asking Steve about his history and you'd fill it easily.
I literally think we should probably just once a month just have the Steve Jordan. Do you want to host the show once a month? Would you come in? You want to do that?
Unfortunately, I would listen.
I could host the show.
Just have Steve come in and talk for an hour.
Definitely could host the show.
Yeah.
There's a wealth of knowledge here. And I already have a couple of emails from listeners about windows. So
I wanted to say quickly.
We're going to get to that. Yeah.
We already knew there was demand for this. Otherwise, we wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
That being said, people came out of the woodwork, and I have gotten so many messages, so many emails you know, people have grabbed me at events asking, who are the students? Can I talk to them? Can I hire one of them? I think people who are tuned into Old House stuff in Rochester might know about Steve. They also know that if they're that tuned in, they know that Steve is in very high demand and trying to take fewer jobs these days. So when people learned that there were others, oh my God, they were everywhere. This was really exciting to a lot of people, like a lot of people.
Yeah.
Which was great.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's one of, before we get to Christina's story here, I'm just curious to know where the clients come from. I mean, if you're an individual homeowner, if you own, you know, sort of a historic building or an old business, I don't know. I mean, have you thought about this? Where are your customers going to come from?
Yeah. I think it'll probably be mostly, homeowners. Mm-hmm. And I think for, you know, other types of properties, I'd certainly want to help if possible. You know, when you get into larger properties, the jobs start getting a little more daunting, and there's more regulations that go along with doing work with lead paint, because all of these old windows will have lead paint. But it's certainly something that I would like to at least take a look at and try and figure out a solution to help these people keep their windows. And fortunately, Steve is here and a resource that I can rely on for questions, as well as Brandon, who is our other instructor, to shoot them an email and be like, hey, this is what's happening. And also, fortunately, there's other students in the area that I could, we can collaborate. If it's a big job and it might take two or three of us, there are other people here in Rochester who can help, and from all across, you know, the region.
Yeah. Listeners, if you've got questions on windows, I already have a couple on email.
Now's your time.
No, this is it. I mean, like, and maybe you're like me. It was 4 or 5 years ago. Someone was coming door to door in my neighborhood saying, like, I think you probably need new windows. And so our neighbors, you know, got the estimate. And it's a very similar size house, not a big house, city neighborhood. And the estimate was like for like $48,000 or something. And I'm like, I don't know if most people feel like, but maybe that's normal. I don't know what's normal. That felt like a lot to me. And they were just going to, carve holes in the wall, take out all of the windows, and just install brand new windows. And listeners, if you've got questions about that, if you want to talk about, you know, preserving, repairing, et cetera, this is really the time, because I don't know what is typical. I don't know how best to go about this. I'm sure, Steve Jordan, for years you've had these kinds of questions. Do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I will weigh on that just briefly, and I'll just tell you, for $48,000, you will never recoup that amount of money in energy savings during the life cycle of that window. You can be sure about that.
Okay? Not a good investment.
That's one of the deceptive things about new windows or replacement windows, okay? I also wanted to make clear, since you're announcing, you're giving my name out, that I'm semi-retired. I am not taking work anymore. I still go to work every day, but I am not taking work anymore.
Call Merritt.
We've got eight students who are happy to pitch in, but not Steve.
Call the other students. Let's bring in Christina Ilario, who's on the phone with us, who is also a student in the Windows Workforce Pilot Training Program. Christina, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you found this program.
I'm a carpenter by trade, and I'm a carpentry instructor as well. I teach at the Hammerstone School here in Trumansburg in Ithaca. And I was lucky enough to be connected to Hammerstone when Hannah was looking for applicants for this program, because she emailed us to have us share it through our social media, which we did, but I also promptly applied. I was not about to pass up an opportunity to work with Steve directly. I have been restoring windows probably since 2018 with another local contractor that I worked with, Verdigris Collective, does a lot of historical renovations and restorations. And we did a lot of window work and didn't know what I was doing, but we found the Windows Sash Bible written by Steve. And, you know, we used that as a Bible, and we repaired hundreds of windows using the book. So I knew that I needed to try as I might to get an opportunity to work alongside Steve, get to know him, and really understand how he goes about restoring windows. So I was thrilled to be able to be a part of the program work with Steve and Brandon and all of our classmates. We had a great bond and over the course of those few weeks.
I love that she found the window sash Bible. To be clear, Steve is a God. He's not the God. He's just a God. And Christina, what was this experience like for you?
I mean, incredible. First of all, getting to connect with other people outside of my immediate area to really broaden my horizons, make connections with people and the other students. And to see the, I mean, it was very clear to me on the very first day of our classes, the wide variety of people that Hannah and Steve were able to bring together that all had a skill set that was unlike each other's skill sets. But we all had this unique way to apply that skill set to window restoration and repair. And I thought that was absolutely incredible. And I would not have expected that that grouping of people, but it was so cool and so great to meet everybody and to really bond over those few weeks.
What do you expect to now do with these skills, Christina?
I am looking forward to continuing to teach about historic window restoration. Like you all have mentioned, we have plenty of homes in these areas that need, the windows need some love. And being a lead instructor here at Hammerstone allows me to create and develop classes and continue to teach this work to just, you know, everyday homeowners. It's great if you can hire someone like Merritt to, congratulations, Merritt, by the way,
you
on your
much.
LLC. But it's great if you can hire somebody, but it's also not something that everybody can do, and not everybody can hire somebody, a professional. So I do think that this is work that can be done by everyday homeowners if they just have the skills taught to them and just, you know, empower them a little bit with it. And if they have the time or the means to do that, then I think they should absolutely be able to do it to take care of one's own home. You know, I think that's what creates connections with your home, to instill value in your home and to show that value to future generations. You know, to see if I saw my parents fixing historic windows, maybe I wouldn't have waited until my 30s to get interested in historic windows. Mm. So I think it's worth it to show the younger generations that maintenance on your home is something that you can do. So I do want to continue to teach these classes. And of course, I want to do it myself because I have so much fun just being in the workshop repairing windows. But that won't be my main focus, but mm-hmm. I'll absolutely be one of those people that Merritt can call when he's got a big job.
I mean, no, it's a great description of the varied courses that some of the students in the Windows Workforce Pilot Training Program are going to take here. You're hearing Christina Alario on the phone. Merritt Smith is in studio with us. Hannah Davis, administrator of the Windows Workforce Pilot Training Program, is with us. Steve Jordan, an instructor for the program. Wayne Goodman, executive director of the Landmark Society of Western New York. Before I grab a phone call, which I'll do in just a second, because we've got phone calls. We've got emails. People care about windows. No, this is good. But I didn't ask you, Steve. You know, over the years, where did most of your client base come from?
Well, you know, I came here in 1991 to work for the Landmark Society, and I was there a few years and then went to Barrow Architecture. And so I knew a lot of other contractors, and people knew who I was. And most important is I realized there was a need for this. So most of my work came from owners of older homes who love their windows and want to keep them intact.
Individual homeowners,
and they want to keep their homes intact. I did a little bit of commercial work over the years, but not a whole lot. It was mostly residential work.
Well, it sounds like there's still a tremendous opportunity here. And let me work through some of the questions that listeners have. So we'll take Lisa and Pat. Lisa, I'll grab you first from Pittsford. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi, Evan. Boy, you were really touching on some great hot topics for me personally. I was on yesterday and for the pet rescue. Now I'm on today. I am a Village of Pittsford trustee and spent 6 years as a chair of the Historic Preservation Board in the village. So we are so, so grateful to this program. And boy, if you want some work, call Village Hall and put your name down, because we are always asked by our residents how to restore old windows, because we have, you know, certain regulations that we want windows primarily repaired versus being replaced. And homeowners struggle because it's hard to find somebody to do that repair. So I just want to say thank you so much and call the Village Hall. Put your name on our list to recommend to homeowners and as well as the preservation chair. I mean, we'd love to know who you guys are and get on our list.
Lisa, thank you very much. Anything you want to add there, Wayne?
Well, I was just going to, when I first heard the Village of Pittsford, it just made me think of just preservation boards and preservation commissions in general. And it made me sort of go back and and think about our initial comments about the need for the program. And just a quick scenario that we see a lot at the Landmark Society is a property owner appears before a preservation commission or the Rochester City Preservation Board. And they make an application to replace their windows. As character-defining features of the structure, they typically will get denied. And then the homeowners will call us and say, okay, who do we call? And for far too many years, there's been a really, really small list of trained professionals that can do this specific type of work. It becomes really frustrating for those town officials. It becomes frustrating for those who are on preservation boards and commissions, and it's really frustrating for homeowners. So I couldn't be happier than, you know, to hear that Merit is starting this LLC and that we've gotten this first pilot under our belt because we have to start making some headway.
Lisa, thank you for that. Let me grab in Geneva. Pat, next. Hey, Pat, go ahead.
Hi. I'm a retired contractor. I spent 45 years as a one-man show, what was today would be considered a dinosaur, self-taught. And one of the things I wanted to say is that people just don't know. People have this notion because it's been so highly advertised everywhere. They don't know that you can do anything other than stick in vinyl windows. They just think, well, that's all you can do. And I tell people, and this is something your guests probably don't feel free to say, but I do because I'm just Pat in Geneva, but vinyl windows are trash. They are garbage. They're almost never identifiable. If you have a sash go bad, they just replace the whole window. They're not cheap. And when they are cheap, that's not a good sign. Other thing I wanted to say is I think it's good to say older home rather than historic because a lot of people, like my home, is 100 years old this year. And a lot of people don't think of this neighborhood as being full of historic homes.
That's They're a good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so my most important thing is to let people know there are alternatives to replacing your windows with vinyl units. This house has a dozen vinyl units in it, and I'm slowly putting in prime. And people don't even understand when I tell them what a real window, like, yeah, like a real window, not a vinyl window. And they don't even understand the difference.
Yep, I would be in that category of people. That would be me. That's why we're doing this. Pat, thank you for that phone call.
Thanks for the show.
Yeah, thank you, Pat. That's Pat in Geneva. So 2 points there. Let's work through both of them. First of all, his contention that vinyl, his quote, vinyl windows are trash. Steve Jordan?
Well, they're temporary windows. All right, they're temporary
Very
windows.
Diplomatic.
You know, they look bad. They generally can't be repaired, although there are some people who will repair a piece of broken glass, but it's kind of an ugly repair. You know, they're the Yugos of windows. All right, and so if you're searching for a price, that's where you go. But a good window, a quality window, a Marvin window, an Anderson window, Pella or Colby window that's appropriate for your house is expensive and can be comparable with the repair and restoration work.
Now let me ask all of our guests a little bit about this distinction and how they see it. He said, older doesn't always mean historic.
True.
And what do you think, Steve Jordan?
Yeah, I think that's an important topic because sometimes when you use the word historic, you're putting us into a box that people are wary of. Oh, it's those historic people, okay? And so, yeah, he's right about that. We need to be careful about that. Okay?
Wayne, how do you see the difference?
Well, that's a good question. I agree with Steve. I think definitely there's certain instances when you say older, and we've mentioned it a couple of times today on the show that, you know, in many ways we're blessed and cursed in Rochester with having such an old housing stock when you compare it with across the country. I think usually the term historic typically, for me at least, signifies, you know, a high level of integrity, a lot of originality. But it doesn't mean that we don't have what we call older houses out there that still have old windows that need to be restored in some way. So I get what he's saying. I don't disagree with making those differences between older and historic.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think just because someone has a house that might not be in the historic category doesn't
sure.
mean that as an older house that
right.
it wouldn't be a great candidate for some restoration.
Exactly.
Yeah. Does historic connote any sort of cultural relevance to you, Wayne? Maybe not necessarily. Maybe it can.
It could.
Yeah.
You know, it certainly could in different instances. I mean, when we place properties on the National Register of Historic Places, you know, we take a look at the historic significance. So who lived there? What's the history behind, the structure? But we also look at architectural integrity and originality as well as age. So there's multiple factors that go into sort of that, I guess what you'd call sort of pseudo-official term, historic.
Also historic neighborhoods. Sometimes the individual units aren't particularly wonderful, but
the context
yeah. neighborhood as a whole is important, and so it's a battle of attrition. You start losing your details and it just goes on and on, or you start saving your details and it goes that way. So
anything you want to add, Hannah?
No, I mean, I agree with Pat from Geneva, and I want to say thank you to Pat for Geneva for articulating some of what we've been discussing this whole time. As a former professor, I might be a bit of a pedant when it comes to word usage, right? And this is something we bump into in historic preservation, right? Because, traditionally the word historic does mean that it's exceptional in some way, right? Versus historical, which is just old, right? But I think it's really important. I harp on this all the time. It's really important to think broadly about this stuff and not pigeonhole ourselves. You know, old stuff is important generally. It doesn't have to be exceptional to be worth, our time and money and consideration.
Yeah, there's Hannah touches on I'll call it a movement in preservation now, trying to move away so much from that maybe purist historic significance levels and try to give, I think, a bit more importance to those structures that might have a lot of cultural meaning but may not have the original materials intact. They're still important, and we still need to focus on them.
Merritt, historic, old, doesn't matter to you? You'll take the job?
Yes.
Okay.
And the LLC's been filed, so the Browncroft Historic Windows is not going to change its name.
It's like Browncroft Old Windows.
I'll say the windows are historic to the home. I think an old window is important to a house, so... Yeah.
Okay. Christina Ilaria, anything you want to add, Christina Ilaria?
I think I tend to agree. I like Pat, and I like what Hannah had to say, too. I don't want people to feel like their wooden windows are not worth restoring because they're not designated as historic
or
a historic home.
Yeah.
But the wooden, like, to make something extravagant enough to consider historic, like, somebody has to give some time and love to it. So let's be those people.
I am due for our only break, and here's what we're going to do. On the other side of this, I've got a small pile of email that sort of constitutes a little bit of a Windows 101. We're going to have some fun with this. This is good. We're going to find out, who needs to call Merritt like now and who could probably wait a little bit. Our guests are talking about the program that Merritt and Christina have been a part of, the Windows Workforce Pilot Training Program. Administrator Hannah Davis, instructor Steve Jordan with us, and Wayne Goodman, Executive Director of the Landmark Society of Western New York. We'll get more of your feedback on the other side of this only break of the hour.
I'm Megan Mack. Friday on The Next Connections, our colleague Scott Pukas hosts the show. In the first hour, a look back at the TV series Lost on its 20th anniversary. Our guests talk about its impact and how the TV scene has changed since Lost debuted in 2004. Then in our second hour, the Anomaly Film Festival is back. It's a genre film festival, so you'll hear about horror, sci-fi, fantasy, action, and more. Talk to you Friday.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. All right, to your email, Linda writes to say, when and where is the next window class and how does one apply? Okay, Wayne Goodman.
Oh, wow, that's the big question. As I mentioned earlier, first of all, I'm really thrilled, and our organization is thrilled that we took this first bite. You know, this was a bit painful. We had to work through the COVID delay, so we're glad to get this one under our belt. Now, what we need to do is start getting some feedback as far as what went well, what didn't go well, what do we need to do differently moving forward, and then secondly, we need to find the funding. As Hannah stated earlier, it's complicated. It was probably a bit more complicated, I think, than we thought it would be. Certainly worthwhile, and I think we need to just focus on finding those grant funding and schedule the next one. We're certainly interested in doing it because we feel like there's a need and we feel like there's a great interest.
We're working on one tech issue. Steve, come to the mic. Just tell me what we're working on here. Are you not hearing the headphones?
Don't hear anything.
Not hearing anything in the headphones. Yeah, that's not working either there, Rob, I don't think. So
I had press cough.
Maybe we've permanently muted there. Well, we're going to work on Steve's microphone, Steve's headphones there. And while we do that, let me just mention again, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. How did Rob do in restoring your headphones? Preservation.
He did a great
Rob
job.
Rob Braden.
He was efficient.
He was. There we go. Rob is the best. 844-295-TALK if you want to join the program. Connections at WXXI.org. Paul writes to say, he's a retired architect. He says, Evan, interesting program. A question I have in restoring old windows is the pockets, the airspace that the old weights on ropes would go up and down as the sash moved up and down, dead airspace. When a home was originally insulated, if they ever were, or insulated today, this space is left uninsulated, an air leak, a definite air leak. How can you restore a wood window, properly insulate this void, and make the sash move up and down? That is, without a doubt, the most esoteric, absolute wonky question we've ever gotten, and I love it, Paul.
Okay. Is this Paul Miner?
It is, Paul. How did you know?
We got a penny pincher.
How did you know?
Paul.
How did you know?
Well, first of all, people that own boats will say a boat's a hole in the water where your money goes. And a window is a hole in the wall where your money goes. But we want to have that hole because we want the light, we want the ventilation, we want to look out at our neighbors or our children playing in the yard. So the hole in the wall is an important thing that we value. If you have a wall that's insulated, people will often want to insulate the weight pocket. What have you achieved? If the wall was insulated to an R12 or so, but what have you achieved when the best that you probably have with your window opening is an R2 or maybe an R3? You hadn't achieved a whole lot. What is important is to quell any air infiltration around the pulley or other around the weight pocket access panel and things like that. If that answer doesn't appease someone, then you can pull the casings off, cut the plaster back, and you can render the upper sash inoperable, and you can put foam insulation or rigid foam insulation in the back of the weight access panel where the upper sash weight formerly ran. That's another way to do that.
But I think going back to what Steve said earlier, is all of that work that you're going to do that, and you'll never recoup the cost that work would be to save the pennies per year per sash, and you've ruined the functionality of one of your windows.
I think we should also point out for people who, unlike Paul, maybe don't know what those spaces look like. This is, 2 square feet or something? This is a tiny, tiny little overall part of the structure that makes up the wall of a house.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
It's quite small. I appreciate the question. No, as I said, I love being pedantic. It's a good question.
It's a great question.
It's a tiny space, yeah.
It is a good question.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Let's go back to your phone calls. Thaddeus and Kate next. Thaddeus in Rochester. Go ahead, Thaddeus.
Hey, how are you?
Very good.
I've been listening to this, and it's great, thank you. It's very interesting. I renovate properties, and I'm just curious, does restoring the window produce the same R value as the vinyl replacements? That's my first question. And the second question, I guess, is this may be kind of a dorky question, but what is done on the outside with the flashing to keep the water out on the older historic windows.
Okay.
Okay, Steve, I'll do the best that I can on that. First of all, if we were to sit across the table and have a numbers game argument, then you'd probably win that argument with numbers. But the truth is the numbers don't mean a lot. They might mean only a few pennies or a dollar per opening savings in a year. A restored window with a storm panel is a solution for a long time, 25 to 50 years, whereas a new window begins to lose efficiency immediately. There have been countless lawsuits about loss of the argon gas, and unfortunately, low E, which can be beneficial, is often used on elevations or sides of your house where it really doesn't do a lot. You have to think about the use of low E. So I'm sorry to be kind of brief, but we could talk about this for 4 hours, and that's as far as I'll go for now, okay?
Thank you, Thaddeus. Merritt, do you want to add?
I don't know what he means by the flashing.
Yeah, I don't either. The windows were made with good joinery.
Yeah.
Yeah, and slopes to throw the water away.
Well,
yeah,
hold on a second. Let me ask him. Anything you want to add, Thaddeus, on that point?
What I've always seen with the vinyl replacements is we put a piece of aluminum, you know, away from the window. We wrap all the wood casing in aluminum and then caulk it so the water, you know, wicks away and doesn't get trapped in any of the cavities as water and snow are hitting the house.
Okay. Well, there's no flashing in an old window. The sills were made to slope away and shed water, theoretically with a drip reglet on the underside, which is not always true. And the casings, of course, vertically are caught to the building and put on. It's all usually made in a way that water doesn't infiltrate. I mean, over the years, when pieces and parts fail or shrink, then yeah, there can be water infiltration, but generally that's not much of a problem.
Students, Merritt, Christina, anything to add? Merritt first?
I would just add that a lot of the water issues are mitigated by properly maintaining and restoring them, because they are designed for the water to just slope away and run off on its own, and the paint seals and protects the wood so that, you know, a proper restoration will fix a lot of those problems before they start.
One thing to also add, and excuse me, Steve gave a fantastic presentation over at the Academy of Medicine on mm-hmm. general information regarding window restoration. And one point that we make and that Steve really hammered home that evening was the old windows, typically, they come from materials that we can't get any longer. I mean, these are old growth, very, very dense woods. So the question of money and savings, it's a little misleading. And this is, I think, what Steve's referencing is when you get a quote for a window and it's a, you know, vinyl window or a new window, and it comes with maybe a 20 or 25 year warranty, and you pay the money for the window. If you keep in mind, if you hire someone like Steve or Merritt to come and they restore your window, you're going to get far, far more out of that window. So it becomes this strange comparison. Oftentimes I'll hear from maybe contractors that say, look, Wayne, this window is cheaper than if you restore this other window. And I say, yeah, but this historic window has been here for 110 years and it's going to last another 100. These were put in before there were guarantees. You know, the guarantees were the word of the contractor. And so it's important for us to understand, I think, the quality of materials that we typically have in some of these windows.
Christina, anything to add before I get back to the phones?
No, I think they about covered it.
We could do this for the next 2 hours, everybody. There's so many phone calls and emails. So here we go. We're going to try to get through as many as we can. Go ahead, Steve.
I'd like to add that to compete with a new or a replacement window, we have to, in our climate, we have to have a storm window. Okay.
Mm. Okay. Kate in Greece, got to keep it tight. Go ahead, Kate.
Okay. Wonderful information, first of all. So maybe I can end on a little funny story. Years ago, I had a canvasser come through and gave his spiel on the doorstep. I'm listening about replacement windows, and he suddenly said to me, you have a very bad condensation on that front window. And I was kind of puzzled because I thought, well, I don't know. And I looked over and I realized what he was looking at. And I didn't know what to say to him. I was embarrassed immediately. But the only thing that came out of my mouth was dog snot. Because my three dogs, and I couldn't keep up with it. And he saw it was all condensation. And I thought he was going to fall off my step laughing after I told him what it was. Because he was so serious initially about what that was. And I said, oh, no. It's dog. So
well, so for in this case, thank you, Kate. In this case, it was dog snot. In the case of Judy, who writes in, she says, can you please give rehabilitation workers info again? My 100-year-old front porch outer storm windows need new wood framing. They measure 42 inches by 43 inches, so a little bigger outside. Looking out the old glass, everything is wavy and a little distorted since the glass was made so long ago. That's from Judy. Maybe it's dog snot. But if it's not, Judy, so what do we do for Judy here? Steve, Merritt?
If someone contacts us or contacts me or the Landmark Society, we have a list of people who will make storm windows, new storm windows. They're a little more common than most people think.
Okay. Yeah.
So just quickly, the Landmark Society is a wonderful, they're a wonderful resource overall for people looking for custom kind of products like that, contractors, et cetera. But if anyone would like to get in touch with our students and are interested in having learners work on their properties, they are more than welcome to get in touch with me at Flower City Folk. A quick Google will reveal my email address, and I'm happy to pass along that information to our students. We've been collecting contact information this whole time from eager people, and, you know, that's part of the gig, right?
Hannah Davis at Flower City Folk there. Lisa in Rochester on the phone next. Hello, Lisa, go ahead.
Hi, I'm so thrilled to hear this program. It breaks my heart when I watch people in my neighborhood, especially people on limited income, trading out their perfectly good old windows that suit their homes for, you know, cheaper replacements just because they don't know how to weather strip them. I wish the city, the county, and the state were investing in this kind of workforce development because it would preserve the resources we have. It can't be outsourced, and it's just an incredible opportunity for people to learn how to work on their own homes.
Lisa, thank you very much. I mean, that's a big part of it. Learning how to work on your own homes. You heard Christina say, I mean, that's part of it for you, right, Christina? It's not just only about the employment opportunities in the future.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's 100% empowering people in their own homes, what they can do.
Well, Lisa, that is a great point. Connected to a lot of the issues we've been talking about with windows, got a couple of emails from listeners who are asking, you know, Evan, you mentioned, you know, your neighbors had a quote of like $48,000. What is a fair price and a decent investment for windows? What's the difference between restoring and replacing? Is one more expensive than the other? Good questions. We're not going to give you a quote on what your house would be, listeners, because we are not at your house. But what's roughly a fair price for a window? And how do you know if you should restore or replace? Is it more expensive to do one or the other? Steve, do you want to start?
Generally, a fair price for replacement windows in the $1,000 range, all right, can be twice that. Just depends on the windows. Like you said, we're not there.
Sure.
It usually costs more to restore a window than it does to replace a window, but the restored window should last another 100 years, and the life span of a new quality replacement window is 30 years.
Okay, so
yeah,
Merritt?
And I would also say it depends on how much work the window actually needs. That might be something as simple as a sash cord replacement, which is not, you know, a full restoration. A full restoration involves removing the sashes, stripping the paint, reglazing the glass, but it could be a small one-day or even half-day project, depending on what's needed.
What an awesome hour this has been. A ton of great information for listeners. A chance for you to learn more about this. In our show notes, we're going to connect you to what you've been hearing about the programs, Flower City Folk, Merritt's new company, you know.
Browncroft Historic Windows.
What is it again?
Browncroft Historic Windows.
All right. Listen, you're off and running, man. You're doing great. And in our last just over a minute here, I want to mention that Hannah has not only been the administrator for the Windows Workforce Pilot Training Program. She's the founding director of Flower City Folk, and it does happen to be Halloween today.
Coincidentally.
What is the Spooky Stories Project?
Yeah, so for the last 3 years, we have collected stories about paranormal experiences from members of the public. This is the first year that we've gone online with it, and we're accepting digital submissions. So this is a real plot twist, and I apologize to people who tuned in about Windows, but it as you said, it is Halloween. So I encourage people, if you've seen something spooky, seen a ghost, heard something weird, experienced something you can't explain, we would love to know more about it. We're building a collection of these local stories. You can learn more on our website, flowercityfolk.org. And we have a big old banner on there, so you can't miss the Spooky Stories Project. But we'd love to have your contributions.
Flowercityfolk.org. Share your spooky stories. I saw a ghost in my bedroom. I woke up in the middle of the night. Turned out it was just condensation in the window.
or dog's
not. Yes, dog's not. That's what it was.
We're not interested in realistic explanations.
That's not. Yeah. You don't want the condensation in the window. Listeners, thank you for the wonderful and consistent feedback this hour. A lot of people with very similar questions and such great information. I want to thank our guests. On the line with us, Christina Alario, who's been a student in the Windows Workforce Pilot Training Program, student at the Hammerstone School in Ithaca. Good luck to you. Thanks for sharing your experience with us, Christina.
Thank you so much for having me.
Merritt Smith, a student who just launched his business today. You're going to find Merritt in
Browncroft Historic Windows.
Brownstone. Browncroft Historic Windows. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Steve Jordan, always a pleasure, sir. Still helping people with the Window Sash Bible, a guide to maintaining and restoring old wood windows. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Wayne Goodman, Executive Director of the Landmark Society of Western New York. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
Hannah Davis, Administrator of the Pilot Training Program, Founding Director of Flower City Folk. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Thank you for being here. And from all of us at Connections, be safe. We'll talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.